Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Welcome back to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. That's the name of this program, Today's Issues. Tim Wildman with Walker Wildman and Ray Pritchard, raised in Dallas. We're not. And Steve Jordahl is with us. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, all.
Ray, did you want to comment on what we were talking about last half hour? You didn't get to talk much there.
Well, it was covered so well, but
yeah.
Let's just say, the sooner we get that memo released, the better. Because if you sort of, I mean, Tim, you made an interesting comment just offhandedly. You said when Sandy was finished, it sounded like a John Grisham novel. It did, except that as we've pointed out, the truth generally is stranger than fiction. You really couldn't even make this up in a novel. What appears to have been going on, I mean, as you said, the FBI for so many decades has been held in the highest esteem when clearly now, people inside the FBI were openly working against Donald Trump during the election campaign. Whatever the truth is about that, whatever's in that memo, I hope the Intelligence Committee and the President will do whatever needs to be done. Let's get it out this week.
Let me tell you another thing in thinking about this. I just occurred to me, if you're Jeff Sessions, who is the new Attorney General, well, he's been there for what, 6 months or so?
Longer, probably 8 or 10 months.
Okay, how long he's been there. And I'm not excusing his inaction to this point on this issue. We'll wait and see. I'm willing to give him another week to see if he moves to fire this Peter Strzok, for example. Mm-hmm. He walks into that Justice Department, and he's having to look over his shoulder.
Yep.
And because everyone in that building's against him politically. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
Right.
And I don't care if you are the number one guy. If you can't even trust your secretary,
right,
for sure. Now, I'm just using a metaphor, I guess, right there, but he probably brought his own personal secretary over from wherever he was, the Senate. But you get the idea. Do you guys know what I'm saying here?
Absolutely.
And you can't go, it's hard to go in and just say, you're fired, you're fired, you're fired, you're fired, you're fired. And then you clean out your hall, you know, and then you have no administrators. And these guys are probably all involved in cases.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? This is a very precarious, very difficult position for Jeff Sessions to walk into. And then you leave work at 5 or 6 every day. You wonder, I wonder if that guy's going to try to undermine me or, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Anyway, that's, again, back to a John Grisham novel type thing. This really, this is, I could see Jeff Sessions, you know, being a little worried about.
Yeah, Sessions almost needs, and he may have this, but he needs an informal team of advisors that are not part of the bureaucratic swamp of which he's trying to
right,
fight against. And they need to be, they need to have some level. He needs to have people other than the people he can't trust by his side. Maybe he does, but it's hard to operate when you can't trust anyone you talk to in the DOJ.
Hey, we're going to come back to this story in just a minute. Steve's got a lot of other stuff to talk to, but we mentioned last hour, where in the world is Dr. Frank Turek? And yesterday he was in Russellville, Alabama. The law almost caught up to him. So
is that like where is Waldo?
Carmen Sandy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Where's Waldo?
Where's Waldo?
Is Frank wearing one of those striped shirts?
That's what we're talking about. The law's after him.
Okay.
So he's going to Waco, Texas. No, I'm just kidding about the law being after Frank. Frank's in Waco, Texas, and or he's on his way to Waco, Texas. Why ain't you going to be there tonight, Frank?
I'm almost there, and we're going to do, I don't have enough faith to be an atheist tonight, gentlemen, at Baylor University in the Paul L. Foster Building, room 240 at 7 p.m., and everybody's welcome. We're going to have, of course, Christians, but also atheist skeptics there, and there'll be time for Q&A, so I just want to let everyone know, at Baylor University tonight, in Waco, Texas. I don't have enough faith to be an atheist, so I hope people will come out for it. We're expecting a pretty good crowd. And these presentations on college campuses are always interesting, Tim, because you always have atheists showing up whenever you call something, I don't have enough faith to be an atheist. So there's a lot of give and take during the Q&A, so it makes for an interesting evening. So I hope people will show up. The details are on our website, crossexamined.org. That's crossexamined, it's on the end of it, .org. So we're there tonight in Waco at Baylor, and then next week at Eastern Kentucky University.
What are you between Dallas and Waco right now on the interstate?
Right, almost in Waco. We're at County Line Road right now, down Highway 35. And now, Ray, I was told, if I'm not mistaken, are you from Russellville? Are you in Russellville, Alabama, where I was yesterday?
Hey, listen, I'm a Russellville boy, and I believe you were at the First Baptist Church, right?
I was. I was in Russellville. I spoke there on Sunday, and then Sunday night I don't have enough faith to be an atheist. And last night at the Russellville High School Auditorium.
Fantastic. Well, that's my hometown. That's my high school. That's my home church. How did it go in Russellville?
Oh, it was great. Great people there. The church there is pastored by Patrick Martin now. And one guy came up to me yesterday or Sunday when I was there speaking, and he said, this is where Ray Pritchard was reared in this church. We got a statue to him somewhere around here.
Somewhere in storage down in the basement.
Hey, so Frank. So, Frank, you're kind of breaking up. You know,
right.
You need to get some help emotionally. But
when
and where tonight, real quickly.
Tonight, 7 o'clock in the Paul L. Foster Building at Baylor University. 7 o'clock, room 240 in that building. I don't have enough faith to be an atheist. Be there.
They call it Baylor, Frank.
Baylor.
No, Baylor.
Baylor, after Judge Baylor.
Yeah, don't call it Balor or whatever you said.
Whatever.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, see you, Frank.
Thanks, guys. See you.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Frank's whatever right there was a little bit disrespectful, don't you think? I was trying, I'm sure he was returning the favor. I was trying to help him not embarrass.
That's exactly right.
I was trying to help him not embarrass himself when he gets there tonight. He says, well, I'm glad to be on Baylor's University campus here. It's Baylor. Baylor.
Baylor.
All right. You know,
used to be a Baptist school.
It still is.
Well,
in name. Southern Baptist, right?
I don't know if it's Southern Baptist.
Southern Baptist, yeah.
Was it Southern Baptist?
isn't it, Ray?
It was, yes, with the affiliate, and it's still largely Baptist in its affiliate, right? But okay, that's another whole story.
I know.
But it's changed. We're yeah. glad Frank's there.
We could spend the whole segment talking about that.
That's right.
He's going to try to witness to the Baylor to the Baptist atheist.
Yeah. send your cards and letters to Tim.
Yeah. Folks, you can't have a Baptist atheist if you think about it. So don't send your cards and letters to me. But anyway, all right, Steve, what do you got?
A couple things that we should note off the top. Yesterday, remember, we talked about a school shooting. This morning, there was another one, and these things kind of happen in spates. So I'm very sorry to report that one fatality in a school in Marshall County, Kentucky. It's in western Kentucky, Marshall County High School. One victim was killed and several others wounded, they say. So this happened this morning, and we're praying and thinking of the people down in Marshall County. Parents have been taken to a different school to recover their kids and the kids that weren't affected by this and everything. So another Kentucky school. And remember, Kentucky was also the state that had one of the other school shootings in the day a decade or so ago. I'm trying to remember the name of the town. It was
Paducah.
Paducah.
I want to say. Man,
it was Paducah.
Yeah.
Paducah,
that's
Kentucky.
That's been 20 years ago.
It was a while ago, yeah. But still, you don't recover from those things. This morning, the Supreme Court granted the government's motion to expedite the briefing on the DACA case. So the briefs in opposition are now due on February 2nd. So they're really ramping up the calendar on the DACA case. Then this from the Russia Files.
Couldn't save that for Ed tomorrow?
Well, we could have. We'll probably have more. I mean, there's so much. This is Democrat leaders Schiff and Feinstein have given a demand to Twitter's and Facebook's CEOs, respectively, to ask for a forensic study of the Russian bots or trolls that have they say were involved in the Release the Memo campaign. So they're saying there's an ongoing attack by the Russian government through Kremlin-linked social media actors for that Twitter hashtag, Release the Memo. So they're trying to go there, and you guys already said that Attorney General Sessions was interviewed by Robert Mueller. So they are either frantically looking and trying to find something to pin, or they're continuing and reaching higher and higher.
We actually haven't talked about that.
Oh, we haven't.
No,
I thought that's what you guys were talking about.
So if you want to explain that a little bit.
Well, Attorney General Sessions was dragged in front of Special Counsel Robert Mueller's investigative committee for hours yesterday to talk about the Russia investigation. And it is the highest official, the first cabinet member that we know of that has been interviewed with regard to the possible collusion angle with the elections in the Russian campaign. So they're, depending on what you believe, it's either desperation time or they're almost ready to announce a...
Sounds like to me they're wrapping it up.
They could be. But I don't know how it's going to go. Mm-hmm. I mean, they don't... Everybody believes kind of what they are disposed to believe, but we have not seen any evidence to date that there was any collusion. There is apparently evidence that the Russians did try via Facebook and Twitter to influence and maybe spread a little chaos during the election and shortly afterwards, but we have seen no public signs. And they kind of keep this stuff under wraps, but with everything that's been leaked, if it was there, believe me, you would be seeing it.
Yeah.
So that's what is breaking in the news today.
Okay. Is that it?
Well, no, that's not the only stories
I have. Play music now?
No. Okay. Let me just say you should probably be glad if you are concerned about police overreach. You hear from Black Lives Matter and everything. Well, they're concerned with brutality, but in the Netherlands, in the Dutch city of Rotterdam, the police there have launched a new pilot program. They're going to confiscate expensive clothing and jewelry from young people if they look too poor to own them.
What?
If you're walking around and you look poor, but you have a Rolex watch and a $1,000 jacket on, they're going to undress you in public.
No way. Is that legal? Can they do that?
Well,
evidently.
This is Holland, so I don't know about their constitution. It wouldn't really go over well here. According to the police chief, whose name is Frank Paw, they are often young guests who consider themselves untouchable. We're going to undress them on the street. We regularly take a Rolex from a suspect, clothes rarely, and that is especially a status symbol for young people. Some people now walk around with jackets of 1,800 pounds or more. That's not weight. That's British money. They do not have any income, so the question is how they got there.
Mm-hmm. Well, so thankful we live in America.
I know. I'm just saying.
So if you look poor, but you got the bling, I guess, is that it?
That's
I mean,
right.
You got the.
Well, you
know,
talk about
know.
Profiling, Ray.
Okay, that's profiling, and that's wrong.
That's just wrong.
Good night.
Yeah. So you can be happy about that.
Is this left to the discretion of the police officer, I guess?
I don't know how you tell someone that's poor if they, you know, don't.
Well, be careful.
If they're walking around with a Rolex and holes in their tennis shoes, maybe that's how they determine. I don't know. But, yeah, be glad you don't
that's
live over
bad.
There.
Yeah.
Well, that's nuts. Where is that again?
Rotterdam,
Netherlands?
Yes.
All right.
Which I sailed into as a young man.
I was going to say don't travel there, but if...
The Netherlands is a great country, but,
you know...
Rotterdam. Don't wear your Rolex if you got one, right?
Yeah.
We want to...
Dress poorly.
Reconsider Rotterdam.
On the tour.
Something.
Yeah, on the tour. Maybe do an extra museum in Amsterdam or something. I don't know. What do you got, Steve?
All right. Have you been following, did you, at the bottom of the hour, Todd Starnes talked about this case, and I wanted to get your thoughts on it, too. Apparently, there's a group called AmVets, American Veterans, and they wanted to place an ad in the Super Bowl program. This is the written magazine that you get when you get into the Super Bowl. My dad used to find these for me when I was growing up, and every Super Bowl he'd find me a program from that they sell online, and I have a bunch of them at home now. But for this upcoming Super Bowl, AMVETS wanted to put an ad in that just said it was a picture of the flag and it said, please stand. The NFL says, no, we're rejecting that ad. Apparently, really? They're afraid that they're going to get some pushback from some of their players.
Hmm. Yeah, or maybe they don't want the, quote, controversy caused by that. It's kind of, as you say, I'm just calling them out, so to speak. The NFL, you know, that brings me, that's an interesting point because everybody's got their opinion on the NFL. I think universally among our listening audience, it's, you know, the kneeling, mm-hmm. taking a knee during the national anthem was incredibly disrespectful mm-hmm. to our country and to our military and to our right. founding principles. I think that's almost universally agreed upon. The NFL has lost 10% of their viewership during the season. I don't know how the postseason is going to play out or the Super Bowl. Super Bowl, they have huge numbers. It always does. It's the number one watched show in America every single year.
But you can judge it against other Super Bowls
That's
to
true.
See whether they're gone down.
That's
or not.
True. But here's the thing. And please don't throw things at your radio when you hear me suggest this. I know, but at this point, it's only a tiny percentage of NFL players who are still doing the knee thing, mm-hmm. take a knee thing, that I've been able to discern or notice. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of NFL players, a majority of NFL players, probably a vast majority of NFL players who don't agree with taking a knee during the game, okay? That's clear because it's only a few that are doing it.
Right.
But that's reflected on the whole NFL because of what you've just mentioned here, it's the NFL's leadership that's allowing these players to disrespect our country in the name of free speech while they wear a uniform and work for the NFL.
Right.
You see where I'm going with this?
Yeah.
So I don't know how this is going to affect I haven't watched much of the NFL because of the take a knee. I'll occasionally here and there watch a little bit. I don't know about the Super Bowl much because of the take a knee
right.
type situation. But I'm just saying that I kind of hate it for the 80-90% of players who you know, Ben Roethlisberger, the quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers, he was outspoken on this. Drew Brees and others, mm-hmm. you know, they're not going to take a knee because it disrespects our country, but they're not going to get into a fight with their teammates who want to take a knee.
A couple of the owners have stepped up to intervene in their teams, and I'm thinking of Jerry Jones in Dallas and Robert Kraft with the Patriots, who will be in the Super Bowl. I don't know. They're going to be facing the – who's the Super Bowl is against? The
Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah. Eagles,
Philadelphia
thank you.
Eagles, right.
And I don't know what the Eagles ownership or – coaching staff has said, I don't know if any Eagles are still taking a knee or not. I did notice that the conference championship last week. Man, what day is it? I noticed that there were no Patriots who knelt during the national anthem, which was a rousing rendition.
What strikes me about this is if the NFL is all of a sudden taking a neutral route, meaning we're not going to offend one side or the other, we're just going to play football and not take sides, they've ruined that. They've ruined that because they have taken sides by allowing the players to kneel. And not only allowing the players to kneel, but they hosted some social justice conference at the NFL headquarters and made a public statement that they're donating millions to some social justice, you know, movement, which social justice is the Black Lives Matter movement. Mm-hmm. So they've taken sides on multiple occasions, but all of a sudden – a third-party private company can't run an ad that the NFL dislikes.
Yeah, it's
and all it says is please stand.
Yeah, it's right. Yeah, it represents the sentiment of a vast majority of the fans that will be holding those programs as
right.
well.
Yeah.
So,
all right,
I want to introduce you now. This is going to be a little bit. It's going to sound at first a little bit off topic, but I like it for a couple reasons. I want to introduce you to the latest hero at the Supreme Court. Do you remember when they had a problem up in Oregon with the spotted owl? Ray, do you remember that?
Yeah.
Back 10, yeah. 15, 20, 25 years ago,
oh, yeah, sure.
An environmentalist found this owl in the Oregon woods. Well, now the hero is the dusky gopher frog. The dusky gopher frog is at a case in the Supreme Court. Yeah, the case is Weyerhaeuser v. Fish and Wildlife Service. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service took a bunch of private land that Weyerhaeuser, which is a logging company, wanted to develop, and it had already sunk several million dollars, $34 million, into developing this land. That's what they were going to spend. And they said that because of it used to be the habitat for the dusky gopher frog, the Wildlife Service says you can't, it's now set aside for that. The problem is the dusky gopher frog doesn't live on the designated land. By the way, the dusky gopher frog, very picky about its breeding environment. It needs temporary ponds. It needs a forest where treetops are relatively widely spaced. So this is a frog that just, it really is picky.
It jumps from tree to tree. Is that what you're saying?
Or temporary pond to temporary pond. They have to be small ponds. So the dusky gopher frog does not live on the land, which has been designated, and the land doesn't meet all the criteria for its survival. But still, the Wildlife Service has branded it as critical habitat. So the Supreme Court is going to weigh in on whether the government, an agency, can designate private land as a critical habitat when it's neither a habitat nor critical. So it may be some environmental sense coming to the Supreme Court. I know that you've been dying to comment on this, Tim.
Yeah, well, what's the difference between a bullfrog and a toad?
Well, this is from this is from Environmental Wacko Files.
Oh, man. Steve Jordoff picks the music for these files. He does a great job.
So that from the Environmental Wacko Files. Hopefully we'll get a little bit.
The dusky, was it dusky?
Dusky
gopher frog?
Yeah, dusky gopher frog. You can look it
up. Where are they native to?
Apparently, Louisiana is where this particular
Louisiana
part is.
Down in the swamps, I guess.
Yeah. In the swamps.
They're growing big down there.
Yeah, that's right. And then there's just a couple other things as we wrap up. You guys talked about the Hawaii governor.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. But talk about it again.
No, I was just, this is another file I had, and this is from the Lost file.
Okay.
You know, Governor Ige, which is how you pronounce his name, apparently couldn't find his password and log on for his Twitter account, which held up the missile alert stand down order for some half an hour while people, I was reading on one of the Christian sites, it was saying people were making right with their God before they were going to be immolated.
I think the governor knew that. He was sort of being the Billy Graham of the moment.
That would be odd for a very Democrat government, governor. But
he probably said to himself, you know what, I got the password, but I'm going to wait about 30 minutes before I send out a message because I want people to get right with the maker. You think that was his motive?
That's taking a very optimistic look at that.
No, well, you didn't hear what Fred and I and Ray and Walker, I think, all colluded.
Oh?
Yeah.
We colluded, that's right.
We colluded to say the governor should never admitted that.
Well, he wasn't in on the collusion, apparently, because we're finding out about it.
No, you make something up.
Yeah.
You don't tell people that you forgot your Twitter password.
Or if you want to be honest, you just don't say anything. That way you're not lying.
Well, that's what he was guilty of, not saying anything quick enough anyway.
I would just refer it to a committee.
And have them investigate it for two years.
A task force.
A task force that will be researching this question, and they will be
in 2 years.
They'll be making their report readily available when I'm out of office.
That's exactly what it's going to sound like.
Okay.
That's what happens in D.C.
Have a great day, everybody. We'll see you next time.